Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to another Realty 411 Radio Invest Wisely broadcast segment. We're so excited to be here, and today we're going to be learning about a whole new niche, something that I need to actually learn about, more about, and that's self-storage facilities. We're going to get all the scoop about why self-storage facilities make such a great investment. And our guest today is going to share with us why he feels that self-storage facilities is right for his portfolio. So we're going to be speaking with Scott Metnick, who is the president of OCREforum.com and Marblehead Real Estate Partners. He is a seasoned real estate professional with a keen market insight and a thorough understanding of the current investment opportunities. Now, Scott has over 30 years experience transacting residential and commercial properties, and he's been involved in over $200 million of value-add real estate transactions, and he's collaborated with his investors who have purchased distressed assets and who have repositioned those assets for a safe and consistent return. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Linda. Thank you very much. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Thank you. It's a little bit gloomy out today, but, you know, still beautiful.
that's why we live in California, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes, we're not under snow like other parts of the country.
Exactly.
So anyway, Scott, let's go ahead and get right to the interview. Now, you've purchased both multifamily properties, single-family homes, and you've even developed properties from the ground up. Now, after having so much experience in all these niches, why did you take the leap into self-storage facilities? Why did you seek out a new sector?
That's a great question, Linda. Well, as you know, I run a REIA group here in Orange County, California, Orange County Real Estate Forum. And so I have speakers come in on all different subjects, on buying apartments, on lease options, on this, that, and the other, and buying hotels, whatever the flavor of the day is, I bring speakers in for people to learn. And over the years, I've been flipping houses for 20 years, and the market goes up and down in cycles. So I've been trying to look for something that will be safe through almost any real estate cycle. And actually, self-storage is the safest in any real estate sector that I believe. And here's why.
Really?
It has the lowest foreclosure rate of any commercial real estate. So, you know, what's interesting today is, like I said, I have speakers come in and you get these guys who are selling you know, how to buy an apartment building and how great it is. So if somebody, you know, takes a $40,000 class on how to flip houses, then they're all excited. Let's go do apartments, you know. And what the prices are people paying today, I mean, it is really crazy. And
the cap rate has certainly, it's not what it used to be with apartments, I'll say.
No, I mean, and everybody's chasing the value-add place. But to be honest, I'm going to be chasing the value-add place in self-storage. We'll get more to that in a minute. But, you know, everybody is chasing that, you know, that bright coin. Okay, that one looks good. And they go after that because, you know, most people have lived in an apartment. You know, you go to college, you live in an apartment, then you buy a house. So people understand that process. And like, there are people buying stuff today in the Midwest at six caps that it makes no sense. And if the market shifts a little bit, which, mm-hmm. you know, it's happened in the past, so obviously it's going to happen in the future, you know, those people are going to get in trouble. And there's even people investing today in A-plus properties because they think, oh, the rents are so high. But even if you look at downtown Los Angeles, there are so many brand new apartment buildings coming, and the rents are $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month. Well,
I know.
If we have a hiccup in the stock market, if we have a hiccup in the real estate market, which we all know it's coming, how is somebody going to afford $6,000 for their apartment rent? They can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, what is safe today? Well, think about Las Vegas and Phoenix back in 2009 and 10. What was happening? People were losing their homes. They're in the 3,000-4,000 square foot home, and they lose them because they lose their job. What do they do? Either you move in with mom and dad.
Downsize.
Right, exactly. Or they move into an 800 square foot apartment unit. Well, 3,000 square feet don't fit in 800 square feet. So what do? You put your stuff in storage.
Right.
Until.
Oh, no,
get
I get
back,
it. I
like,
get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. I know a lot of people that have multiple storage facilities. I mean, who have their things in storage facilities. And I tell them, I say, why do you keep paying for, I mean, because they'll have like three or four, you know, different storage spaces. And they're like, well, I just can't seem to get rid of my mementos. I mean, a lot of people also carry things from the past and their parents' furniture or their parents' things or, you know, things like that.
Right. Right. And if you really think about self-storage, it's a transitional business, meaning when the market's great, you know, which we've had a really strong run, you know, if you're adding square footage to your house, you put your stuff in storage for, let's say, 6 or 9 months, you add your square footage, you move it back in. Well, okay, that's great. But now in reverse, you know, when things aren't so good, you have to downsize. You have to put, you need to put yourself in storage. So it's a perfect business model. And so that's why I'm super excited about it, because, like I say, all the speakers I had come through. And believe me, I'm a professional in, you know, going to 3-day boot camps. I mean, if I go to another one, I think I'm going to poke my eyes out. But I've been to too many. But Yes.
Can you tell me, Scott, about some of the deals that you've discovered in the marketplace? And, I mean, you said that you're so excited about it. What are some of the deals looking like? Aren't they really expensive to get into?
Well, it depends on what one considers expensive. I'm a value-add guy. I can't buy something that's already nice because I have to do something to it to tinker. Being I'm a general contractor, I used to work for banks fixing up repos back in the 90s. I did like 2,000 houses, so I'm used to fixing stuff up. I like buying people's junk. The beauty of self-storage, and this is the key for anyone out there that's interested in self-storage. 74% of all self-storage across the United States are owned by ma and pa that own one, maybe two. The REITs, if you're in the big city, you're going to see the REITs, like the Public Storage, the Extra Space. You think that they own it all. They don't.
Yes.
They only control 18%. And then there's the other top 100 operators that own 8%. So 74% are owned by ma and pa that are very comfortable. They love the cash flow. Now, when ma and pa want to retire and, you know, they're tired of being at the self-storage from 9 to 5 and so they're doing it the old-fashioned way, you know, what do? They try to give it to their kids. Their kids think it's a pain in the neck. It's a cash cow, but, you know, it still works to them.
Right.
So what I'm looking for is buying from the mom-pa's. Again, 74% of the marketplace, so it's huge. This is like what single-family houses were 15, 20 years ago before all the REITs and everybody came in, the single-family, and bought them all up. And because today, I mean, Zillow and everybody's buying houses. And, you know, you should go up to any RIA group, everybody's, you know, buying houses left and right. Just here in Southern California, you know, a fixer comes on the market, 20 minutes, there's 100 offers. And I'm almost not exaggerating, it's ridiculous. With self-storage, again, it's competitive, don't get me wrong. Don't think there's nobody out there doing it. It is also competitive, but it's a business and real estate, and so most people stay away. So where the value add play, there's actually three plays. Mm-hmm. One is buying from mom and pop that own a smaller building. Now, what's small? A 50,000 square foot storage building is equal to a 100 unit apartment building as far as management and having people working there. So, it pays for itself.
Okay.
I can buy a 30 or 40,000 square foot building. And what I'm looking for is that, and a lot of times mom and pop only built so much, they didn't build out all the way. So let's just say there's 3 acres that come with it. So I put an extra 20 or 30,000 square feet on there, get it stabilized. 2 years later, it's worth a couple $1 million more.
Mm-hmm.
That's one play. Here's the second play.
Okay.
Sears. What is Sears, Toys R Us, Kmart, Tavern
Club? Yes. Yeah.
They're dead.
They're going out of business. Too much space.
Right. Amazon has killed them. Well, what do they have?
Yes.
Owners that don't know what to do with these buildings because...
Yes.
So these can be converted to self-storage. And
really?
The benefit? Yes. Yes. Now, there's some things... Sometimes cities will fight you. So you can't always win. You don't close on the building and think, oh, God, I'm going to turn it into self-storage. You've got to do your homework slowly. Make sure the city's on board with you.
Yeah.
But it's inexpensive because you do a new facade in front. The most expensive thing, if you can go two-story, the slabs are generally 3 inches. And so either you have to do, if you can go two stories inside, you do a pour-over so you have a thicker slab, and then you can do two stories, or you just reinforce the footings in there. But here's the best part. All the locations are great because you want to have drive-by. Of self-storage. If you ever see them on the freeway, everybody knows where they are because 60% of everyone who looks for self-storage has driven by. That's how they know it's there.
Now, have you seen examples of owners who have turned larger industrial offices into self-storage facilities?
You can do that, and also I've seen like in Los Angeles and in bigger cities, I've seen people, they turn office buildings into self-storage.
Oh, wow.
And because, sometimes if it's an older area where office space does not make sense, self-storage can make sense. And here's the beauty. It is so easy to figure out what the demand is in any area. I literally, from my couch in my house, I could go anywhere almost in the country, almost, not everywhere, but almost, and know what the demand is in any particular area because the average person uses 7.6 square feet per person in the United States.
Okay.
So there are certain pockets like in Texas, like Austin, Texas right now, self-storage is going up everywhere. I mean, it's a hot commodity. Austin's a hot market. The problem is they're overbuilding them. I already know that from my couch here in California. I'm not going to Austin. Dallas, same thing, parts of Houston, Nashville, Portland. So I'm staying out of those major markets because I can't compete against public storage getting their money at 2% and where they could build a brand new property. However, I can be a little bit out of the way, a smaller mom-and-pop property, do what I do, and I can make tremendous money. It's awesome.
Now, you mentioned self-storage facilities across the country. So is this something that you can manage long distance, or do you feel that it's best to be, close to your self-storage facility?
Well, that's a great question, Linda. And
thank you.
No, and I'm going to answer it this way. Have you been to a self-storage property? Okay.
Yes.
So how much excitement happens there every day?
Not much.
One of our distributors
actually has a lot of stuff in the self-storage, so when we pick up some magazines, we go to his self-storage.
Correct. So, again, it's not exciting, and even with my investors, my presentations on my webinars, we're looking for investors right now. And I tell people it is the most boring thing you've ever been to because nothing really happens. a person moves in, a person moves out,
yeah.
and some locks get sold.
Right.
And if you have a truck rental like U-Haul, yeah, you have a little
yeah.
bit more action there. Otherwise, it's crickets. But people pay every month.
Uh-huh.
So if I have a property, again, I'm in Southern California. If I buy a property, I'm just going to pick Mississippi just for fun.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to be there every day because I already have software that's the same software as
uh-huh.
the REITs use. I know what's going uh-huh. on. We have cameras.
Yeah.
Again, no toilets, no sinks. Nobody's, you know, the dogs aren't barking. Nobody cares. It's a very slow-moving business.
Would you hire a manager if it's long distance?
Yeah. There's a couple of different ways to go.
Okay.
Some of the bigger REITs will offer third-party management, public storage, extra space. You know, they're getting into that business model. And generally what they do is they'll manage it for you if they like the property. And
mm-hmm.
one of the things they like to do is like to buy it from you, you know, when you're ready to sell, if they want to, if they're in the mode to buy that particular property.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, you definitely want third-party. You can have your own property management company, and that's one avenue. The other is have a third-party, you know, such as one of the REITs or there's other third-party management companies out there. And generally you have one or two people there. You have a maintenance person come in once in a while because maybe one of the doors, you know, needs painting or something jams up. But it's, again, very slow moving. There's no excitement.
Nice.
And if it is too exciting, there's, you know, something's going wrong and then you need to fly out there. But,
that's funny. If it's too exciting, you're not doing it right because it's a boring business.
Exactly. Because, I mean, like I said, right, you know, I flip a lot of houses. And I tell you what, every day there's something going wrong. The tile guy doesn't show
right.
up. The carpenters don't show up. Somebody leaves the water on. I mean, there's always
yeah.
something that goes wrong. And so I decided I want to be into boring and not exciting, but make a lot of money at the same time.
That's funny. Well, give us your contact information, Scott, please. That way, in case any listeners want to get in touch with you about self-storage, they can go ahead and touch bases with you directly.
Sure. The name of the company is Square Storage, so it's squarestorage.com. You can look up on our website. We are right now looking for accredited investors only. We have a 506C3. And on there is all my contact information. It's scott@squarestorage.com. And it's a great way to basically, you know, join me in getting wealthy in self-storage because again, I don't know anything else out there that's going to have safe, consistent profits year after year. If the stock market tanks, that's okay because, you know, as again, the market changes, people put this up in storage. We have another up run in the stock market a few years down the road. People are living large. Amazon, they keep ordering stuff. That means the old stuff has to go in storage. It's the perfect business model.
So. Now, let me ask you this, Scott. In every niche, there's risks, and there's things that can go wrong in every investment. What about self-storage facilities? What are some warning signs, or what are some things that investors need to be, you know, looking out for?
Well, in self-storage, the interesting thing is it's very hard to find one in foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it's built in the correct spot. And obviously, yeah, the old rule, location, location, location. If you put a self-storage in the middle of Kansas, in the middle of an open field, probably not going to be full. The key really is location. Now, being on a freeway is great because 60% of your people drive by, and that's how you know, you grab your tenants. And then basically 70% of all millennials are, you know, are in the market to use self-storage. And obviously they're on their phone. So, and people only rent within about a 15 to 19 minute drive from wherever they're at. So as long as you have your demographics there and then you can look at the demand. Now, yes, you can build one and then five of them go right next door to you in the next 3 or 4 years. That can happen. And that
right.
can be a little, that can be devastating. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
If I'm in an old apartment unit and a brand new building opens up next door at the same cost, I'm probably going to move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I have my stuff in storage and a brand new one opens up next door, I'm not going to move. I'm not going to move my stuff. That's ridiculous. That's going to take me a whole afternoon to move the stuff that I don't want to see anyway. It doesn't matter. Now, your vacancy may drop because obviously there's competition and, you know, they may have rent specials, and that can happen. So it's very, very important to pick your location. If there's a lot of land available, like in Austin, Texas, there's a lot of land, you know, you can run into some trouble and you have a harder time renting. But which here's the other fascinating thing about self-storage. It is 92.8% occupied nationwide on an on an average. That's everyone. So, So, you know, but again, I mean, if you're around 15 brand new ones and, you know, you're struggling, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, too, 51% or 52%, I think, women rent units. So what's that mean? Mm-hmm. The bathrooms are going to be clean. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be broom swept. And you have to have nice people there, and they have to feel safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
So that means fencing, that means lights. And another important thing is 24/7 access.
Mm-hmm.
Really important. Cause, although most people are not going to store their stuff at 3 o'clock in the morning, they want the opportunity to do so.
Right. No, I hear you.
So that's the danger of buying in the wrong location. And again, I mean, that's rule, you know, 101 in real estate. And self-storage, you can be off the beaten path and still do fine if you do, you know, a little bit maybe more marketing. But again, you know, try to find one that's in foreclosure. Even in the worst of times, it's very, very rare.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good sign for the sector as a whole, isn't it?
Yeah. And do you want to hear another secret?
Yes.
Name any other commercial real estate that you can put 10% down on a property. There aren't any. Self-storage SBA loans, you can put down 10%. Mm-hmm. You can build a brand new one.
Nice.
And put down 10%. And if the
brand
SBA
new,
puts,
huh?
You know, you can't. You know, obviously, you have to have the wherewithal in order to, you know, do it. But
right.
the SBA, you can buy one or build one with 10% down. Now, should
very
you?
Very nice.
Yeah. You're highly leveraged. It's probably not the best idea. However,
right.
if you're new and you're trying to get into your first one, doing 10% down, and you got to, you know, then you, I would probably live a little, if you're that far on the edge of putting all your eggs in one basket, I would probably live pretty close to it. But there's no other commercial real estate that you can put 10% down, not on apartments, not on office, not on retail.
Very nice. Well, thank you so much for that insight. And you know what's interesting too, Scott, is I'm seeing a lot of very niche type self-storage facilities, for example, where you can store your wine and other things like that. Are you finding that to be unique in the marketplace?
Yeah, you have to look at, you know, what's around. Obviously, if there's a lot of lakes and rivers, you're going to want to have some boat storage. If you're in a higher-end area, the wine storage is good. Another idea is to get people coming to your location. You can have, like, a post office boxes just to get, you know, people coming in. So there's all kinds of little
niches. That's a nice concept.
Yeah. The other thing
and then
is,
also, like,
know,
I'm sure you can also rent, like, U-Hauls, too.
Yes. And U-Haul, I mean, I've heard the arguments not to have U-Haul to have it or budget.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, as people move into a town, you know, wherever they return the truck, if they have stuff put in storage, generally they'll put it with you. So it's a good thing to have. And here's another thing. What if you're in Portland? A lot of bands come out of Portland, so a lot of places will have where musicians can rent space to play music.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And yeah, And so it's there's a lot of little niches, and you can put, you know, solar on the roof to, you know, to basically have free electricity and sell it back on the grid. But it makes sense. So
what about billboards too? Like adding a billboard or something if you're in a busy, you know, location.
Yes. I mean, you can do billboards, you know, cell phone towers, all kinds of stuff that, you know, doesn't your property, but it brings in income. And at the end of the day, I mean, obviously the higher the income and, you know, you're going to, when you go to sell, it makes more sense. And also, see, one thing with mom and pa's is they don't use today's technology. Because if you're, you know, let's just say you're looking for a hotel room at some city, aren't most of the prices pretty similar? If it's a high volume weekend, you know, prices are going to be higher. Well, mom and pa's don't have that software. The REITs do. So if I, you know, the argument is, you know, do you want to be close to a REIT? Oh, yes, I do. Because if they go up in a 10 by 10, if they go up to $110 for the weekend, I want to be at 105. And the minute that they change theirs, 10 minutes later, my price automatically changes. And so I'm competing with them. And where the mom paused, you know, basically, you know, they're going to be at $80, $90, you know, for the storage unit. You know, obviously the, you know, maybe the blacktop is pretty beaten up. There's potholes, that kind of thing. You know, and most people, again, women rent 52% of the time. I want to make sure everybody feels safe and comfortable in every unit that we have.
Great information, Scott. Thank you so much. We're going to be wrapping up within the next 5 minutes. So before we close out the segment, I wanted to also ask you, you know, about some of the biggest lessons that you've learned in real estate, perhaps not in self-storage, but just in, you know, in your general experience. What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned?
Wow. I think I could probably talk about this for 4 hours. It's in my RIA group, I have one of my meetings every year is I talk about everything that I've screwed up and flipping and still made money. At the end of the day, you know, if you can make a profit and it's close to what you're looking for, take it and roll to the next deal. So many times, and every once in a while I get caught up in this and my wife kind of hits me in the back of the head, thank God. She is my better half, is trying to hang on for, I know it's worth X, and you're 40,000, 30,000 less, and I tell you what, when I don't take that first deal that's close, and then you wait for the next one that's even farther away, it's take that profit, run to the next deal, try to make more money then, because every property has a story and a history, and when you put it on the market, either everybody wants it or nobody does. I mean, there's not much in between.
Good point.
And so you never know when you first come on, you know, you get three or four offers. Okay, then you know you have something. And where the housing market's starting to cool right now, I've got some of my properties that are not getting a lot of love. They're not getting showings. And so, you know, my feeling is, okay, now, knowing this, when that first offer comes in, if it's kind of close, it's kind of gone. And I'll roll to the next one because it's, you know, and also location is such a key thing because I see so many new people just jumping in and buying something. And they're happy to break even because they're so excited because they spent $40,000 on 8-track tapes and cassettes to tell them how to flip houses. Well, I tell you what, you know, return the cassettes, return the 8-track tapes, because if you buy something that you think you worst case break even and you lose $20,000 or $40,000, it's not fun. And
it isn't.
Pick that location, make sure it's right, and pull yourself out of it. When you drive by a property, pretend you're a buyer. And I know I've joked about this with you, and I think you've probably heard me say this, but I am a negative buyer. I want to find, when I first pull up to anything, I pull it to pieces. I just destroy it. Okay, this is wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. And then when I run out of things that are negative, and then I think, okay, what's good about it? And if that overrules my negativity, I buy it because, you know, I already know what headaches I'm going to have. And every property has them. There's no such, well, I haven't found the perfect property yet that it's just, oh, it's so great. It's just, I mean, there's always some headache, and I have a bottle of aspirin by my bed because I buy headaches.
You're so right. Every deal is different. There's good and bad with each, and we just have to be prepared for it, you know?
Yeah, because there's hiccups on every deal. I mean, every single one, there's something that goes wrong. Tile guys don't show up. The buyer doesn't bring in the money on time. You know, I've had it where people have stolen the water pipes underneath the house and flooded a house that hasn't seen water underneath it for 50 years. Let me tell you, a house settles about 2 or 3 inches. It's not fun. So things happen. But if you do enough deals and you do it right and you do it smart, you can make a lot of money in this business. And the other side of the fence is maybe you feel that you don't have that expertise. Partner with somebody who does. And put your money to work. Even in my self-storage business, you may not understand it. I mean, but if somebody partners with me, they're going to make a lot of money. And let me have the headaches because, you know what? Like I said, that ball of aspirin.
You're used to it anyway, right?
I am.
You're used to the headaches.
I do.
Well, great, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us on our segment. You gave us some fantastic tips and information for the self-storage facilities, and, you know, we just hope everybody can take action and make their goals come true with real estate. Give us your contact information one more time, and then we'll say goodbye.
Sure. It's squarestorage.com, and it's my email is scott@squarestorage.com. That can reach me. Be more than happy to help anybody out there. Like I say, I train people here in Southern California all the time how to, you know, do this stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And Linda's right. Take action, because sitting on the couch and waiting for that next 8-track tape or cassette to, you know, show you how to make $1 million and just push a button on your computer, it doesn't happen. Get out there and do it, guys. It's a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you so much, Scott. Thanks so much for inspiring us today. And hopefully I'll see you real soon.
Sounds great, Linda. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining us on another segment. And be sure to visit realty411.com for more information on our publication, events, and our social network. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.